The opinions and views expressed in Dead Men Do Tell Tales and all affiliated media are Jordan and Nicole's and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of their training program or others working in the field of medico-legal death investigation. Hey everyone.
Welcome to Dead Men Do Tell Tales,
a podcast about forensic pathology related topics.
I'm Nicole Kroom.
And I'm Jordan Taylor.
And we're both pathology residents who are going into forensic pathology.
And we felt that since we're not really allowed to travel around the world right now, thanks Rona, why not talk about it and talk about forensic pathology around the world?
Yeah. And this was something I was super excited to look into. There was an episode where we looked into it a little bit and diving deep was very interesting.
Yeah. And disclaimer, there is so much information on this topic that we're going to have to distill it down. And the book we were looking at isn't, it's pretty new, but it's not new. Mm. So things might be changed or updated. So we tried to get as much information in here as we could, as correctly as we could, but things might not be 100%. And if it's wrong, please let us know because we want to learn and update people and correct ourselves.
Yes. And we're going to be focusing mostly on the forensic pathology / medical examiner. So person who's actually doing the autopsy.
Yes.
Versus the other forensic scientists.
And a lot of them are kind of linked together. So we might like briefly mention them. But, you know, this is a forensic pathology podcast. So we will not be focusing on like DNA and scene evidence and that kind of thing as much.
In this episode.
In this episode. Exactly. So, quick refresher, a forensic pathologist is a pathologist that focuses on determining the cause of death by examining a body. And in most English-speaking countries, forensic pathology is a subspecialty of anatomic pathology. And the standard path, kind of, again, in most English-speaking countries, is like a high school type of thing, plus minus college, medical school, which might be incorporated into college. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Then you do a pathology residency and then a forensic pathology fellowship. That's kind of the standard. And that's what happens in the U.S. where, you know, high school, college, med school, pathology residency, forensics fellowship. All of the education. We never are allowed to leave school.
Yeah.
I don't think we're talking too much about the U.S., but forensic pathology was formally recognized by the American Board of Pathology in 1959. So in the U.S., it's been a specialty since 1959.
And just as a reminder, and you can listen to our full episode about this, the two big types of death investigation systems in the U.S. are coroners versus medical examiners. Coroners, elected position, few requirements. Medical examiner, doctor, usually board-certified forensic pathologist, goes through that path that Jordan explained earlier. And we're kind of biased towards medical examiner systems, but there are good coroners and there are bad MEs, so it's mostly about the lack of standardization.
Yes, exactly. And then before we dive into other countries, we're going to quickly talk to you about what we're drinking today. Nicole's family had been in town because California's on fire.
As always. They were evacuated, so they came and stayed with me for a little bit.
And somebody had bought this beer that Nicole and some of her family didn't like, so I'm getting to enjoy it instead. And it's called the Mando Haze Hazy IPA that is brewed by Oakland United Beer Works out of Oakland, California, which is just across the bay. And it is so stupidly delicious. Like, I love this so much, I might have to go and try to find it. But it is 7.2% in a 16-ounce can. So by the end of this, I'll be feeling very good.
As if you actually had traveled around the world.
By around the world, you mean just across the bay to Oakland?
Yeah. And then mine is called the Quarantiki. It's one of my new favorite beers from Laughing Monk Brewing, which is one of my favorite breweries in the city. And it is a kettle sour with blood orange and mango. And it is only 5.5%. Mm. So, you know, I'll have to do something to catch up, I guess.
So drinking local beers, but talking about very far off places.
Yes. I mean, this is my ideal day.
So we're going to start nice and close. We're going to talk about America's hat first, Canada. I don't know. So have you heard Canada referred to as America's hat before?
I hadn't until okay. You said that when we were discussing this episode. And I was like, I feel like we are Canada's underwear. I don't know.
I always think of it, like, I always been, I mean, maybe this is because I'm from much closer to Canada. I always called America's top hat. And I mentioned it. We have a new GynPath fellow in the department who's Canadian. And we were talking a couple Fridays ago, and I mentioned, oh, you're from America's hat. And she kind of gave me a weird look. And I was like, you've never heard of that before? It's just, I don't know. I find it amusing. So America's hat is pretty similar to what the U.S. does. So they go through high school pretty similarly. They do college, standard four-year education, usually. If you're going to go into forensic pathology, you do anatomic pathology residency. And for them, it's a five-year-long residency. Their first year is an intern year. So you're dealing with patients doing clinical medicine. And then you have 4 years of anatomic pathology. In the U.S., we only have 2 years of anatomic pathology. If you're doing an APCP program, and it's only 3 or 4 years. So it's much more training in anatomic pathology. And then they have a 1 year fellowship, much like they have here. Canada is similar to the US in that they have a mix of coroner and medical examiner systems, but it's depending on the province or territory. There are 13 provinces and territories. I looked up a couple of them. So Ontario, all coroners are licensed physicians, and usually, but not exclusively, they're family physicians. In Quebec, it's a mix of medical and non-medical coroners. And in British Columbia, it's predominantly non-physician coroners.
Yes.
But in Alberta and Nova Scotia, they have medical examiner systems. So again, I didn't go over all of them, but it is a solid mix between coroner, physician and non-physician, and medical examiner systems. And in Canada, forensic pathologists do autopsies. They may be coroners, so they might do the death investigations. They determine cause of death. They may attend crime scenes, and they often testify in court. And so, as I said, forensic pathology was formally recognized in the U.S. in 1959. It was only formally recognized in Canada in 2003. Mm. So it's much more recent.
So when I was researching Canada, I don't know if you came across these, but Dr. Michael Moulton, who was a guest on our podcast for the sudden unexpected death in childhood episode, who is a pathology resident at the University of BC. He wrote two op-eds about the Canadian medical legal death investigation system and how patchwork and broken it kind of is. So I just thought it was interesting for his name to pop up while I was doing the research. I was like, oh, hey!
Nice.
He's doing some good advocacy work.
Shout out.
Yeah.
UK?
UK. So moving on to Europe, we're going to start in the United Kingdom. So I really distilled my information. So what I have for this is the system they have is the coroners. They are where a lot of places that have a coroner system got the basis for their medical legal death investigation systems. Yay, colonialism. something. So coroner's office in the United Kingdom have relationships with hospitals where hospital pathologists rotate in performing autopsies, and any ancillary lab tests that they need are sent to these hospitals as well. And the pathologist writes a report to the coroner explaining the findings and formulating a cause of death, but it's ultimately up to the coroner to determine manner.
So what I saw was they have high school, college, and AP is like a five-year residency.
Like in Canada.
But then they have this specialist training post that they apply to after a foundation year or two in histopathology. So after like a year or two of AP, they can apply. And once they're done with that, forensics training is 3 years with a test at the end. So it's 5 years. And it sounds like it's 1 to 2 years of AP, about 3 years of forensics. They also have this other path where they do the full AP and then 18 to 24 months of forensics. So there's a couple of different ways you can get through it, but it's like a five-year residency, either 2 years they call it histopathology, and then 3 years of forensics, or like the full 5 years, and then a year and a half to 2 years of forensics. I also saw that they're in England and Wales. Of course, the UK has a bunch of different countries / sub-countries underneath it, so it's kind of complicated.
Yes.
England and Wales, they have this home office accredited group where they essentially check the training portfolio and completion of some security check. And then these pathologists are allowed to perform autopsies that might result in criminal proceedings. So most pathologists can do like the non-criminal proceeding ones, but they're in England and Wales, you need the special accreditation to do these specific autopsies.
Oh.
And then in Northern Ireland, forensic pathology is through a state pathologist department. And then in Scotland, it's the Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal Service directly funds forensic pathology department within major universities. So in Scotland, it's kind of under the universities, which I thought was interesting.
Oh, cool.
And their jobs are very similar to what we have here, except, you know, they're not doing the medical legal death investigation. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a fun fact, but I think it was, I don't know if we call it a fun fact, but anyway, before the body's released to the next of kin for burial, there will often be a second or defense postmortem that was kind of written into their rules. And that's, you know, on behalf of the defendant of the case. And it's usually conducted by a different pathologist. That's either a physical check or re-examining the body and reviewing like the notes, the report, the histology, the photographs, and that kind of thing. So it was interesting that there were like these two different systems in place, and it's kind of written in that there'd be second autopsy versus, I feel like here, the second autopsy is the exception rather than the rule. And it kind of sounds like there it's more common.
Huh. Interesting.
Next, we're going to jump down to Germany. Germany's education system is a little bit different. So they have the same like pre-college training. So I'm going to call it high school. I know they have a different word for it, but you know, same pre-college. But then instead of going to college and then medical school, they go right to medical school, which is a 6-year long training that includes undergraduate.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's 18 months of hospital training after that 6-year classroom training. Part of the curriculum, medical curriculum for everybody includes forensic medicine.
Which is awesome.
Which is like, a lot of places I've noticed have this, which we don't have here, which I love.
Yeah.
Then once you're done with the 6 years of college/med school and 18 months of hospital training, forensic specific education is 6 years after that general medical education. I feel like in the end, it's probably about the same amount of time.
Yeah.
But they get more time to focus on forensics. And then the forensics training includes forensic clinical medicine, forensic pathology, forensic toxicology, and molecular biology. So they cover more. And like forensic clinical medicine is essentially any medicine that involves in legal proceedings. So doing rape investigation, a rape kit type of thing for an assault or battery, doing the physical exam after the assault, asylum cases, that type of thing. So that's really... When people say forensic medicine around the world, they don't necessarily mean forensic pathology. They mean any medicine related to legal proceedings, which includes death, but also includes people that have survived various assaults and things like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. The first time I came across the term was when I was looking at countries in the Middle East, and I was like, whoa, there are places where forensic doctors do both.
Yeah, and it's a lot of places, too.
Yeah, that's yeah. Interesting. It was pretty surprising.
In Germany, forensics is usually housed in universities, like the research institutions and the actual places where they do the autopsies is within universities. And much like here, nearly all death certificates are signed up by non-forensic certified physicians. And only if there's a question, is it filled out by not by the attending. And then this is one of the places, and many I realized are like this, the public prosecutor determines if an autopsy is necessary.
Yeah.
So it's not like a doctor or a coroner goes in there, looks at the scene, and is like, this is a suspicious death. The prosecutor is the one that's like, no, this one needs to be autopsied. So that might take a little bit longer. So there's often a delay before these autopsies happen, which is understandably concerning.
Yeah. My fun fact about forensic medicine in Germany is that it almost died as a specialty in the 1960s because the German Council of Science and Humanities recommended that forensic medicine no longer be taught as a specialism.
Whoops.
But that forensic issues should be integrated into lectures dealing with clinical matters. Hmm. But a bunch of forensic societies in the country got together and they were like, no, this is actually super important and you need specialized training.
Sure is. Italy.
So in Italy, I really liked this phrase. I think it was from the Global Sciences book, but Italy is a country that is renowned for being disorganized, but certainly full of resources, though the ways such resources can be applied may be complicated.
That's a good summary from like the random notes that I have on here. It's just like all over the place.
So what I have based on from that book is that the prosecutor in Italy, it's called the Pubblico Ministero, or public minister, decides if a forensic pathologist is to be called, and that university institutes usually have a department or section of legal medicine where these judicial autopsies are performed, and they also do clinical forensic medicine, so doing those examinations of the living as well. And it's the forensic pathologist who decides if even more specialists are involved, so DNA experts or entomologists. And somebody who undergoes training in legal medicine, after earning their medical degree, there's a test for people who wish to enter the specialization. And it said winners are granted a monthly wage equivalent to a hospital's assistant for the following 5 years. Woof. Where they undergo the specialty training in forensics. Mm. And in the book, it said, compared to other European countries, this training is quite long, but there's no obligation to first specialize in pathology, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, because I saw that their training is like high school, med school, and then a legal medicine fellowship.
Yes.
So it's not like pathology and then forensic pathology. It's legal medicine directly after med school.
Yes, and that legal medicine fellowship is 5 years long, and I guess the pay is not good. Like how when you're a resident in the U.S., you don't get quite that nice of pay.
Well, remember, like in a lot of other countries, it's not as expensive to do something like medical school.
That's true, like, because the education system is
not privatized. Yeah. So it's one of those things you look at salaries and you're like, oh, I can never work for that. And it's like, well, their system isn't as messed up as the U.S.'s is. So
yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt, guys. Not fun.
Yeah. And one of the things I thought was interesting about Italy is because it's this prosecutor, the public minister who decides whether or not an autopsy should be performed. So if the forensic pathologist should be called, a recent survey in North Italy showed that even in suspicious deaths, pathologists were only called on site in 60% of cases. Mm. So a lot of upfront kind of death investigation work is missed because there's this middle person who is not a physician who's deciding whether or not they need the physician.
Yeah, I also saw that often too much time lapses between death and autopsy request, leading to a lot of autolysis and inaccurate test results. So autolysis is like when the organ essentially starts dissolving. So eating itself, essentially, and you're not going to get good histology, and you're not going to be able to get a lot of toxicology results like that after the body's been sitting for too long. You can get some, but a lot of the important information is going to be gone.
Yeah.
My fun fact is more because I love the Italian language. So a physician specifically tasked to certify a death based on a body exam is called a necroscopo.
Oh, nice.
Necroscopo. So like necropsy, necroscopo. I thought it was just really adorable.
So if we went to Italy, we would be called necroscopos. There's another, I think it's one, Mexico.
Oh,
they I have one that I really like.
I have one for, I think, yeah, Indonesia has a great one too.
Yeah.
A lot of my fun facts are just the fun names it's called.
Yeah.
All right. So on to France. Drink some wine, eat some brie. The thing that I thought was cool about this was in medical school itself, there's 20 to 40 hours of teaching on forensics,
yeah,
including for the living victims and death certificates.
Yeah, that's so great.
We do not get that much in medical school. We barely talk about death certificates at all in medical school, but 20 to 40 hours? It's a long time.
Yeah, well, I thought that was great because it teaches people how to fill the death certificates out appropriately.
I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I just am shocked every time.
We should do that. We should do that.
Let's start that.
Okay. Yeah.
So after medical school, after you do a 2-year specialization internship, the quote-unquote med students can apply for a forensic medicine diploma. And so those 2-year specialization internship can essentially be anything. So occupational medicine, public health, psychiatry, pathology, internal medicine, surgery, general practice. So essentially you can do anything for 2 years and then you can apply for a forensic medicine diploma. And then you have this 2-year program where you're doing at least 100 autopsies.
Yep.
Essentially just getting a lot of experience in the field. And that's kind of like a fellowship. It's called a forensic medicine diploma that you're getting.
I would try to pronounce the French, but it would be horrific.
I didn't even put it into my notes. Interestingly, forensic medicine, so I didn't say it was a fellowship because it's not a specialty. It's a competence.
Yeah.
So essentially it's this diploma you get and you can perform it, but it's not like a specialty or a subspecialty. It's just a competence, which is important. Again, forensic medicine in this country includes live victims as well as those in custody.
Yep.
As well as autopsies and all that other fun stuff. And then their setup is a little different. So they have the Institute of Criminal Research of the National Gendarmerie. I'm totally pronouncing that wrong. Where they have 500 people in the military, civilian, forensic pathologists, odontologists, pharmacists that work in kind of this centralized lab. And all autopsies and additional analyses are only performed on prosecutor or judge orders, much like other countries in the EU, I've come to realize.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, but you know, works for them.
Yeah, this isn't a France-specific fun fact, but when I was reading up about them, they were talking about how they perform clinical and thanatological forensic medicine.
What does thanatological mean?
That I looked up. It is my favorite word of this episode. Okay. Remember speleological?
Yes. Yes.
Speleological. So this is the new speleological, thanatological, and it's death lore, aka the scientific study of death. And I was like, is this why? Yeah. And is this why his name was Thanos? Get it?
Oh, because he kills half the people?
Yeah.
Hmm. So he's
interesting.
Like, death. So we are Thanos.
Well, yeah. We are Thanos.
I hope that translated.
So moving on to Spain. In Spain, the system is similar to a lot of other countries we've already talked about, where a judicial authority of some sort orders an autopsy, and then that autopsy is carried out by forensic doctors in the forensic pathology departments of institutes of legal medicine. And then based on the information obtained from the autopsy, determination of death is made by courts.
Mm.
So the courts have the final say.
Yep.
So for becoming a forensic medicine person in Spain, this one I also liked their terminology, so medico-forense.
Oh, nice.
Yes. It's a mandatory subject matter in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So it's offered in all faculties of medicine across the country. And you need to have a degree in medicine and to pass an exam. And then you become a public servant of the Ministry of Justice.
I love that. Yeah. I love that you became a public servant.
So once selected, they have to acquire practical experience for a few months. And then after this period, they're considered official experts with full capacity to perform any type of forensic science report.
Mm-hmm.
And medico-forenses are then ascribed to different sections of an institute. So they can be sent to work in the pathology department, so they'll do the autopsies, or they can be sent to the section of clinical forensic medicine and do the examinations on live people. And it's according to the needs, and there's no specific formal training for either respective area. So it's just kind of like, oh, I'm assigned to this institute, and they happen to need people to do the live people exams instead of the autopsies at this point in time. So I get sent to that section.
Gotcha.
And even though there's no special formal training, training courses are offered on a regular basis so that they can, you know, get more experience in a more controlled setting. My fun fact was that there are few institutes of legal medicine with facilities for histopathology. So the microscopic. Yeah. So all of the microscopy is actually sent with toxicology to a different institute for examination. Like, they can't actually do it themselves, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. So the next area we wanted to cover was quote-unquote Scandinavia, and Scandinavia has turned into Denmark. So we're only going to touch on Denmark of Scandinavia.
Just because it had the most information.
Yeah, exactly. And like we said, there is so much on this that, like, we obviously can't cover every country. So I am not saying this is all Scandinavia, but Denmark is our example of Scandinavia in this episode.
Yeah.
In Denmark, you get a master's in medicine, and then you get a specialist education in forensic medicine. And I found this one website that called forensic medicine nature science and medical science serving the judicial system.
Oh.
So I thought it was really cool because I don't think of forensic, I mean, I know it's pathology in the legal sense in the US, but at the same time, I don't associate it with it just being for the judicial system, but this kind of brought it back to that, which I kind of liked.
Yeah.
Forensic pathology was recognized as an independent specialty in 2008. Before it was part of pathology, but now it's its own independent thing. And in Denmark, a medical legal autopsy must be performed if a punishable act has been carried out or is suspected, or if cause of death is not established and the death holds aspects of interest to the police. They also do live person exams in Denmark.
Yep.
And across the entire country, there's about 1,500 autopsies per year. And this is split among three different sections that are housed at universities.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that each of these universities has a CT. So essentially all of their bodies get a CT, which is great because you get so much more information. I'm sure they can do some amazing studies.
No, yeah.
You have all of this.
That was my fun fact for their country, is they have access to all of the imaging.
Yeah. So it's great. It's just a wealth of information.
Yeah.
And then the only thing I had for this was in the setting of drug abuse, they have to do an autopsy.
Yeah.
So there was a lot that I read on Denmark that was how autopsies are going down in numbers. anytime there's drug abuse, you have to do an autopsy. So, you know, that is remaining relatively steady. But autopsies overall are going down in Denmark compared to other Scandinavian countries.
Yeah, you mentioned how with the access to imaging, they probably are doing tons of cool research. And yes, they are. I spent a little bit of time looking at the University of Copenhagen's forensic department. And they have this study currently going on called Survive,
Ooh.
Let the Dead Help the Living. And so it's this nationwide autopsy-based study that they're doing to better appreciate the different causes of death and how to allocate resources from a like a public health perspective. So I was like, dang, this is so cool. That is really cool. So now we're going to move on to Central and South America. And unfortunately, I mean, there are just so many countries.
Yeah,
so
we had to cut stuff.
For our South America, we're going to be talking about Argentina. So in Argentina, the system has two different levels. So they have experts under the purview of the judiciary, and these are mainly forensic doctors. And then they also have experts that report to the police and security forces. Mm. And this is some forensic doctors, but it's mainly criminalistics. So the techie forensic scientists that you see who are doing like the ballistics and the DNA analysis and things like that. So if the police decide that they want an autopsy, or the forensic doctors working with the police decide that they want an autopsy, mm-hmm. they will not perform it themselves. They send the decedent to the judicial morgue so that the experts under the purview of the judiciary do the analysis.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So it's kind of an interesting system where there is a doctor potentially on the front lines who's deciding, oh, this needs an autopsy, but they will not do it themselves. They send it to other forensic physicians.
Okay.
So to specialize in legal medicine in Argentina, medical doctors take a postgraduate course, which in the case of the University of Buenos Aires lasts 3 years. And after passing that course, they can submit applications for vacancies open in forensic services. And the positions are filled competitively. And it's not necessary to be a pathologist to be a forensic doctor.
Sorry, Nicole's laughing because in the U.S., there's just a we don't have nearly enough forensic pathologists, so it's kind of a buyer's market. First, it just sounds like it's completely the opposite in Argentina, which is crazy to me.
Well, also, saying it's filled by competition just makes me imagine a reality TV show where they have people who want to be forensic physicians on
scalpel in hand, swiping at each other.
Yeah. So good. So good. And my fun or rather sad fact for Argentina is that there are no policies currently designed to promote forensic sciences. And initiatives to change the current situation are very dependent on individual efforts rather than state policies. Even though there's hinted at this competition, it's still a field where a lot of the higher ups don't give it the respect and resources that it needs.
Forensics is awesome, guys. Let's put more money into it.
Yeah.
Although there's a lot of other places that need money too. So.
Yeah.
So on to Central America. So again, we don't have every country covered, so we're going to talk about Mexico for Central America. So to qualify as a legal medicine specialist, you essentially need 2 years of postgraduate training, which is the Mexican Board of Legal and Forensic Medicine, and they recert every 5 years.
Yep.
So it seems like a lot less. Autopsies are organized by the district or state attorney and are mandatory for accidents, homicides, suicides, sudden or unexpected deaths, deaths without medical attendance, or charges as a result of malpractice, which I thought was interesting that they mentioned that specifically.
Yeah.
So anything where they're wondering if, you know, somebody messed up in surgery or something, those are mandated to have autopsies. Forensic pathologist does not do any scene investigation in Mexico. They do confirm death, detect external injury, and diagnose probable time of death at the scene. And I have two fun facts on this one. The first is that the first autopsy in Mexico was done in 1576 to clarify the etiology of an epidemic.
Yes.
Which I thought was really cool.
Yes, I wrote that one too.
And then the other one was that two forensic pathologists have to sign off on every death.
Yeah.
So one cuts while the other one takes notes, and then they kind of work together on the report.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really cool that in the U.S. it's definitely only one person, and you often talk about it with somebody else, or not often, but you can talk about the case with somebody else, but you only need one person to sign off on it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a cool little check that they have two people that are, you know, double checking each other's work, essentially.
Yeah, I liked that also. And then this one, medical examiners are called peritos.
Perritos.
But not like with like the double the R. Yeah, like little dog, except for no, just no, one R. R.
Interesting.
Perritos.
Cool. Cute. Perrito. Yeah. Yep. Hi, perrito. Perita?
Perita.
Perita. Can't roll the R, though, because there's only one.
Exactly. So now moving on to Australia and New Zealand. So Australia and New Zealand. So in Australia, the system is a traditional coroner system based on the original model from England and Wales. And in general, each state and territory has full forensic service capability, but it's provided by a combination of different agencies. And coroners are full-time, merit-based, state-appointed judicial officers. So in terms of education, forensic pathology is a subspecialty of pathology, requires 5 years of supervised training in institution and clinical forensic medicine. So that examination of live people is a separate specialty.
Yeah. And then there's a post-fellowship year in forensics after a full anatomic pathology residency. So this is very reminiscent of Canada.
The only other thing I had about Australia is that they have this thing called the National Coronial Information System, which I think I talked about in a different episode, because it's really cool. It's a secure database of information on deaths reported to coroners in Australia and New Zealand. It was established in 2000, and it contains data on almost 400,000 cases. So it's this like really rich database full of things for research project regarding. And when I was looking at it this most recent time, they have an animal attacks fact sheet.
Yes.
Because Australia has this reputation for being home to some of the most dangerous animals.
To be fair, it is.
Yeah. But
those kangaroos. Those kangaroos will get you. Yeah.
One punch to the temple. But then they said deaths as a result of these interactions remain relatively rare.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I have a couple points in New Zealand, not a ton. I tried really hard to look up New Zealand because I love New Zealand, and it was just very difficult. Sudden and unexpected deaths are referred to a coroner who is a lawyer in New Zealand. Which was interesting. Huh? Who decides if an autopsy is needed. So it was an interesting new direction of like, so the lawyer decides if the autopsy, because they obviously have a lot of medical training.
Squarely in the legal realm and not in the public health realm.
Yep. And then the pathologist performs an autopsy and decides cause of death. And then they, each year a pathologist has about 250 autopsies, which is the max that the National Associated Medical Examiners in the U.S. allows for an office to be certified. Mm. So they ideally keep it to a reasonable number, but it's interesting that it's kind of like through a lawyer rather than through an elected official.
So moving on to sub-Saharan Africa, I'm going to start by talking about the United Republic of Tanzania. And for this one, we also only have two. We know, yes. Africa is a big country. Sorry, guys. Just two.
Africa is a big continent. We're leaving that in there.
No! Yes.
That was you're editing, but please leave that in there. That was great. Yes. Yes. Please.
Fine. I mean, we all know I'm geographically challenged. If I didn't have GPS, I would never be able to leave my house.
It is hard to navigate their way out of the one, like, hallway.
Yeah. Love being you. So mean today.
You're mean to me.
I am. It's love. That's how I express. My love language is sarcasm?
But my love language is 100% sarcasm. So, yep, we're right there together.
So, the United Republic of Tanzania, their system is the forensic medical services are primarily organized at referral hospitals. They have these regional and district level medical officers and assistant medical officers, but most of the cases are referred to this central system. I didn't have much on Tanzania, but as of 2011, they only had 15 pathologists in the entire country.
So my question, though, is how many people are in Tanzania? Because the U.S. is huge, right?
That's one per 2.5 million people.
Oh, that's not enough. Yeah. Never mind, I take it back.
And two of them were forensic pathologists.
Wow.
Yeah.
Represent.
I know. So that was my crazy stat.
That is crazy. That is absolutely
of
crazy.
That country. On the continent of Africa.
So another country in the continent of Africa is South Africa. Which I definitely want to talk about because my cousin is from South Africa and lives in South Africa.
Oh, cool. And this was one of the systems that I think I really liked.
Yeah. So there's 8 medical schools in the country of South Africa. They all teach basic principles of forensic medicine at the undergraduate level. including medical law, jurisprudence, basic postmortem techniques, principles and procedures of medical legal death investigation, and clinical forensic medicine. So everybody gets that in medical school.
That's awesome. Bring that curriculum here.
Cool. Then there's postgrad training in forensic pathology, where you can become a specialist. And this is 4 to 5 years of a quote-unquote residency, which includes anatomic and forensic pathology modules. You also have to do research in order to get into this, which I thought was good. Because here you definitely don't have to do research, but research helps you in so many aspects of just being a scientist in general. So it incorporates that into it, which is nice. So physicians in South Africa are called district surgeons. So even if they don't do surgery, they're all called district surgeons. So if I say that, that's what I mean for South Africa. Forensic medical services are the living, and then morbid forensic services are for the dead.
Morbid.
So that's what they call them. They're all medical. So forensic medical services and morbid forensic services.
That's amazing. Yeah. Whereas in France, they call it thanatological forensic services. Morbid.
So the forensic training includes the living and the dead. Those that are also the morbid forensic service physicians, they do medical legal death investigation in cases of sudden, unexplained, or unnatural death. And the same person performs the living and the dead person services.
Okay.
And the district surgeon would be the one performing the medical legal autopsies. So I thought it was just an interesting system. You know, things are really incorporated into medical school, which is great. And then your forensic training includes anatomic and forensics, and it's living and dead people.
Yeah. Another thing I found interesting about them was that they used to be under the police service, but then in 2006, forensic services were transferred to the Department of Health.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So moving on to the Middle East, I thought this would be interesting because Islam has historically called for respect of the body after death and prohibited its disfigurement. But in 1952, the head of the Islamic School of Jurisprudence in Egypt stated that necessity permits the forbidden, thus allowing autopsies in cases of criminal death or suspected death. So in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which is what I have first, the forensic medicine centers are under the umbrella of the Ministry of Health, and the head office is in the capital, and then they have smaller branches in major cities. And autopsy is usually rejected by relatives because it is a predominantly Muslim country. Mm. So prosecutors try to avoid autopsies in certain circumstances. So this is interesting. If the cause of death is evident by external examination, so like a gunshot wound, or in the case of a clear confession from the suspect, they won't do an autopsy, which are like cases that we definitely do in the United States.
I feel like it's hard because at the same time, you obviously somebody can confess and be lying. But, you know, I guess in one sense, you're respecting the family and the person's religious wishes and not wasting resources.
Yeah.
It's another way to look at it.
Yeah. No, definitely. I just thought that was interesting that those two specific examples were given as cases we would for sure be doing here.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And despite the objections by relatives, law prosecutors do have the authority to proceed with performing an autopsy if there is a high element of suspicion of unnatural death or if information in the medical chart is incomplete.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But they do need to get an autopsy permit, and this is issued by the governor of the province or his authorized officer. And the forensic doctor has to try to return the body to its pre-autopsy appearance to the best of their capacity.
That's, I mean, I feel like that should be a thing anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of education, autopsies are performed by pathologists. I didn't find more information on that, so I don't think there's a specific subspecialty of forensics.
Okay.
You just have to be a pathologist. Oh, yeah, and my fun fact, basic requirements for employment as a forensic medical doctor, apart from having that medical degree, you have to be a Muslim.
Hmm.
And you have to be able to speak Arabic.
Oh.
Because Arabic is the language used in the judiciary system.
Gotcha. Which makes sense.
Yeah. And overall, about 2,000 autopsies are performed annually despite the religious and cultural pressures.
More than I thought.
Yeah. Same. Next, I have Egypt. So forensic medical examiners perform all aspects of death investigation, and they also engage in clinical forensic medicine, so examination of the living. And forensic medicine consists of four different departments. They have the forensic medical examiners, forensic medical laboratories, which are subdivided, and they do all of the ancillary testing, forensic chemistry, which does toxicology, And then the last department under forensic medicine is counterfeiting and forgery.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just like not dissimilar from here, just we don't call it forensics.
So doctors who finish medical school undergo anatomic pathology residency, and then they do a year or two in forensic pathology.
Okay, so not dissimilar.
Yeah. And then forensic medicine has historically been given a lot of importance in Egypt by the Ministry of Higher Education. So forensic courses are taught very early in medicine at all Egyptian universities, and medical students are exposed to a very comprehensive curriculum on forensic medicine in the fourth year of study.
Okay.
So another awesome country with great curriculum. And although Egypt is a predominantly Muslim country, the forensic specialists there don't have the same pressures as in other countries in the Middle East. And the thought is that this is due to the long historic roots of examination and preparation of the dead in that country.
Okay.
So, you know, they're mummies. And then the last country in the Middle East I have is Kuwait. And they only have one forensic center called the General Department of Criminal Evidence, or GDCE. And forensic pathology is a subsection under the Department of Forensic Medicine, which is one of seven departments in this GDCE. Doctors that perform autopsies are physicians with an interest in forensic medicine, and they also examine living subjects.
To be fair, we're physicians with an interest in forensic medicine as well, so that kind of makes sense.
Yes, but because they don't have this, like, they don't have any specific formal training, so they cannot interpret the gross morphology of specimens or tissue sections. So they send that to physicians with specialized training in histopathology. So as I mentioned, there's no formal forensics training, but medical students are exposed to a week of forensic pathology lecturing and a week of field visits to the GDCE, including observation of autopsy procedures. And in Kuwait, they do a similar rate of autopsies, about 2,000 a year, as to Saudi Arabia. And as with Saudi Arabia, there's a lot of pressure on forensic pathologists to try to avoid evisceration. And they also need to get a permit to perform autopsy from the Attorney General's office.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now we're going to jump over to Asia, and we're going to start up north in Russia. I have a couple of, like, kind of sporadic points on this, because I did this mainly by Googling, and I just found some really random points.
Same.
So forensic medical service belongs to the healthcare system. So in a lot of places, it's kind of looped under the judicial system, but it's really under the healthcare system in Russia, which is interesting. They examine hospital corpses with suspicion for violent death, trauma, poisoning, and improper medical aid. And they do forensic exam of corpses from the outpatient setting as well. They also have this background constant death rate analysis that includes alcohol and drug-related deaths. So they do kind of have this larger oversight that tracks death rate over time. And specifically, they mentioned the alcohol and drug-related deaths, which I thought was a good, like, public health point of tracking over time. Because, like, a lot of these that, I mean, I wasn't looking into the public health aspect as much, but, you know, we've focused a lot of our recent episodes on the public health aspect of forensic pathology, but most of this research is focused on the judicial system. So that was interesting that that's one of the points that popped out in Russia. Yeah. And again, I have really disparate points, but forensic chemical, essentially they do this emergency diagnostic of poisoning by forensic chemical experts. And I felt like that was a little bit relevant
for
current situations in which somebody in Russia might have possibly poisoned somebody else that might be trying to take over in Russia.
Yeah, but these are all just rumors. And
yeah, I know nothing.
Do not start tracking us.
No,
thank
please.
You, Russian government.
Please and thank you.
Yes. So now moving on to China. In China, the structure of death investigation is largely based on the administrative divisions in China. So they have five relatively independent agencies that perform death investigations. The first is police organizations, then the prosecutor's offices, then departments of forensic medicine, which are in medical colleges and universities, and then the Institute of Forensic Science in the Ministry of Justice, and finally government or private forensic societies.
Yes.
So the forensic medical experts within the police force are responsible for conducting the death investigation, versus the forensic divisions of the prosecutor's office handle certain types of death, like they do in police custody deaths, in prisons, you know, that type of thing, which is kind of a nice separation of, it's like not something that we necessarily have in the U.S.
Yeah, no, I saw that like the benefits are there are multiple checks on the system, right? Yes. You have these independent organizations. But then the downsides are that there's often conflicting opinions and there's often delays associated with it. So, I mean, it's standard, just like when we were talking about child death review, how different states have like the local versus statewide checks. It's sometimes good to have better checks, but sometimes it's like, well, whose job is this actually? And maybe things won't get covered and maybe things will be slowed down because there's conflicting opinions. So it's like definitely a good and bad thing, but I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, so each of the divisions handle different types of cases.
Yes.
And then in terms of education, they had two different routes I saw for becoming a forensic medicine expert. One is this 5-year program of bachelor's degree of medicine majoring in forensic medicine. So it's a 4-year curriculum followed by a 1-year forensic medicine subspecialty, essentially. Hmm. And then the other one is this 5-year bachelor's degree of general medicine. So it's a 5-year curriculum of like general medicine. And then you have 20 hours is what I read of basic forensic medicine.
Interesting. Yeah, I read 5 to 6 years of undergrad for a bachelor's degree in medicine.
Yeah.
And then a 1 to 2 year postgrad training in forensics.
Yeah. So I guess the difference between the two degrees are that you can do general practice still if you have the second type of, degree in general medicine.
Okay.
Versus the medical graduates that just have that first type of degree cannot practice general medicine.
Okay. Yeah. And my fun fact on this one, so China just has this amazingly complex and rich history. And some of the earliest literature on forensics comes from China. And in the year 1247, this book called The Instruction to Coroners, or The Washing Away of Wrongs, was published in China. But this is back in 1247. So it's just, I think it's really interesting that China really put things down on paper much sooner than most people. And it was a very long time ago and well before anything else. So 1247, thought it was really cool.
Cool.
So jumping across to Japan, education-wise, undergrad/med school, much like Germany, is 6 years. Once they're done with that, they take what I was reading, they called it the MCAT, but essentially like a medical test.
Yeah.
And if you pass, you go on to 2 years of post-grad clinical training. So you have your undergrad med school, then 2 years of clinical training in hospitals, and then forensic medicine is a 4-year grad school training after that. So again, a similar timeline to what we have in the US. And then a doctor or the general public will inform unnatural deaths to the police department. And then general physician or forensic pathologist does a post-mortem investigation on the scene. And then if the death is suspected as criminal, a forensic autopsy is performed. They do not perform an autopsy if there is no possibility of crime, even if the cause is unknown, which I thought was interesting. And it's something that I only saw in this country. But if there is no chance of there being a crime, so person died a natural death, but we don't know why, they still will not do an autopsy. They'll only do it if there's a possibility of a crime.
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. They also have a medical examiner system that's split into 5 regions in this country. So it's all medical examiner, and it's in 5 regions across the islands.
Yeah. The one paper that I was looking at said that the cause of death is almost always determined by simple visual inspection, as it was 100 years ago.
Yes, I like it.
And they have no legal definition of unnatural
death. Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So now moving on to the Republic of Korea, or South Korea. So South Korea has the National Forensic Service, which is a research institute that houses their central forensic medical system. And then they have branch offices at different universities. So kind of how Denmark is a university-based system, so is South Korea. And they also operate the Korea Disaster Mortuary Operational Team. So we've talked about DMORT here in the United States, and they also have a KDMORT in South Korea. Okay. So in terms of education, I didn't find that much. It kind of seems like it's, similar to a lot of places we talked about where forensic pathology is a subspecialty.
Yeah, I saw that there's no training school that's focused only on forensics, really.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And my fun fact about this was that the importance of scientific analysis at death scenes was first emphasized by this so-called South Korea O.J. Simpson case called the Murder Case of Dentist Mother and her daughter. And it was in 1995, fire broke out in an apartment in Seoul. And after the fire, a female dentist and her daughter were found dead in a bathtub inside the apartment. And the prosecutor targeted the husband. However, the time of death didn't correlate. And so the husband got off. And essentially, they only had circumstantial evidence in this case. So if they had done a more thorough scene investigation initially, they might have had more to go on. And so kind of a lot of legislation came after this case, elevating forensic sciences.
Nice.
Yeah.
So now we're popping over to India. So forensic medicine and toxicology is also called legal medicine in India. You get your medical degree, which is an MBBS, and then do 3 years of training or study, including thesis research, to get your MD in forensic medicine. So you get your MBBS, and then you get the specific forensic degree, which is a 3-year degree. You must work in the Department of Forensic Medicine and Toxicology, which is at various medical colleges around the country. So it's not really an independent thing. It's all based out of these various medical colleges. And they do the standard, like, autopsies presenting in court. I didn't really see that they did much in terms of death investigation. And they do about, a typical institution does about between 100 and 5,000 autopsies a year. So it's pretty, it varies pretty widely.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to jump to the Pacific Islands, which is actually 20 to 30,000 scattered islands.
Yes.
Spread across 98% ocean is the area.
98%
ocean, yeah. And it's composed of Polynesia, Melanesia, and Micronesia. And the systems there were produced by a post-colonial mix. So they have coroners, they have medical examiners, but they also have this type of system called European continental systems.
Okay.
And these are police-initiated and oriented. So the law enforcement agency determines what extent of investigation is needed. So like whether or not there's an autopsy, etc. So throughout the islands, they have these three different types of systems.
Okay.
And in terms of education, I didn't find all that much except for that Australia and New Zealand governments have been trying to support the development of medical legal death investigation in the Pacific Islands. So they contribute a lot of infrastructure support.
Okay.
So they're also in charge of disaster victim identification.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And apparently the Pacific Islands face like some of the largest annual losses from disasters worldwide.
That doesn't surprise me. They're just like right in the middle of all the
They've had more than 2,400 tropical cyclones in the past 60 years. Yeah. So the forensic science community works with the respective police and legal departments to ensure victims of disasters are identified.
That's great.
So they have a very strong like DMORT type infrastructure because of their location.
Smart.
Yes.
And then we're going to end with Indonesia. Forensic medicine is also known as legal medicine here. It's a 3-year program after medical school. And like a lot of other places, forensic medicine is a mandatory rotation during medical school clerkships. Med students assist on autopsies. They can perform them independently under supervision. And they also witness court testimony, all as part of their medical school clerkships.
Oh, whoa.
So it's great.
That's right? Awesome.
Yeah. And my fun fact for this, and I think it's a good one to end on, is that once they're done with their training, they get the title Specialis Forensique, or SPF, and they can be addressed as Doctor Forensic, or a forensic doctor. So DokterForensic.
Nice.
Doctor Forensic.
That's all I want to be called when we finish our fellowship.
Doctor
Forensic. Or necropsopo.
Necroscopo.
Necroscopo.
So I think big points throughout all of these are education is pretty varying, although most of the time it's some equivalent of like high schoolish, a combo of med school and college or independent med school and college.
Yep.
And then your post-med school training might either be just forensics and anatomic pathology or anatomic pathology and then forensics. And then you might have live people duties. You might not have live people duties.
Yep.
It's really varying on who chooses to do the autopsy.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of tell who colonized who by how the system is set up.
Just in case that was unclear from other means.
And then there are some places that have amazing names for forensic doctors. Such, just a couple really good ones.
Yes. And there is this one quote that I came across multiple times while doing this research. It's from Sir William Ewart Gladstone, who served as the UK Prime Minister in the 1800s. And he said, "Show me the manner in which a nation cares for its dead, and I will measure with mathematical exactness the tender sympathies of its people, their respect for the laws of the land, and their loyalty to high ideals."
Aww.
And that popped up several times where there were countries that were talking about how kind of broken and patchwork their systems are, and there's this need for standardization, and a lot of higher-ups don't really understand why it's important, and so they were referencing this quote, and I just thought it was really nice and really highlights how different everything is around the globe.
I like it. So thank you guys for listening. We hope you enjoyed our little trip around the world, our little death trip around the world. to escape the U.S. for a bit, because everything is sad here.
Yeah.
So, Schmeeds.
So, if you liked this and any of our other episodes, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. It's how we get boosted up on the various podcasting platforms and other people learn about us.
You can visit our website at deadmendotellpodcast.com, where we link to all of our sources in our episode guide.
On Twitter, we're at deadmendo.
On Insta, we're at the Dead Tell Tales.
And our Facebook page is Dead Men Do Tell Tales Podcast.
And as always, please send us an email with comments, questions, concerns, just saying hi. We love saying hi through the website or directly to thedeadtelltales@gmail.com.
And our opening theme music is Introducing the Pre-Roll by Lee Rosevear, who you can find on SoundCloud.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Slacker.
I'm trying to get you your resources. Also, your cat sneezed on that.
Oh, I thought he cracked it.
Oh, no.
Okay. Nice. Let me get you a Clorox wipe.